Welcome to the Dental Implant Podcast with your host, Pav Kara, your source of knowledge for all things relating to dental implants. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you learned something valuable. I hope.
Okay, titanium nerds, welcome back to the next episode of the Dental Implant Podcast. I'm very, very excited to have a colleague of mine, Nick, who's joining us today. Nick Fahey, for those of you who know him, he is a specialist prosthodontist, and what this guy doesn't know about guided surgery isn't worthwhile. Isn't really worthwhile knowing about, really. So Nick has been into guided surgery for a very, very, very long time. Sorry, Nick, I'm not aging you there by any means. I'm just trying to express your level of experience with it. And Nick's written a book, which I've been through, and it's fantastic. He kind of like goes through the history of his experience with guides, and Nick's going to expand on that in a few minutes as well. And you know, Nick and I, we've known each other for a number of years, and he's a big influence as to why I'm shifting much more towards guided surgery now as well. For those of you who know me, know that I do a lot of freehand work, and one thing I've always said is, you know, you're never going to be as accurate as what a guide is. I'm sure Nick's going to expand on this as well. And it's not the 99% of cases which go swimmingly. It's that one that could have been improved, or the 2 or 5 or 10 that could have been improved with guided surgery. And I'm really keen to hear more about Nick's thoughts on this now. So Nick, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a little bit more about your background, introduce yourself a little bit more, and then let's start talking guided surgery.
Yeah, sure, mate. Thanks for having me on. So obviously you can tell from my dulcet tones, I'm not from these shores. So I came to the UK in 97. I thought I was only going to come for a year. So the fact that I'm still here either means that I'm very poor at making decisions, or I kind of like it. The difference, I suppose, being a New Zealander rather than an Australian, is our weather's maybe a little bit better than the UK, but like especially where I come from, Christchurch, middle of the South Island, it's not that much different weather-wise. So I think we sort of get it. Half of my Australian friends, they sort of like spend about 2 years here, and that's about as much as they can stand, because as they say, the weather doesn't back up, or you don't get good day after good day after good day. So yeah, I came over, and I was going to go to Amsterdam and run with the bulls and do all those sort of touristy things, and you know, before you know it, I got stuck with a Kiwi girl, but like she had no interest in going back to New Zealand, and I was looking around and thinking, what am I going to do? And I was working at that time in Devonshire Place, and we're doing a lot of cases that you know, I was being told by the people I worked with that they would help me with them, and initially then I thought maybe they didn't think I knew what I was doing, which was true, but then I realized that they didn't really know what they were doing either. So I thought, well, if I'm in this privileged position where I'm going to be doing these great cases, you know, Devonshire, number one Devonshire Place, you know, prestigious address, I thought I'd better go and get some training. So that's when I went to the Eastman, did 5 years at the Eastman, sort of part-time, getting my alphabet soup. And that's how I ended up a specialist, and that's probably why I'm still here.
Fantastic, fantastic. So, Nick, so one thing I wanted to ask you is, tell us where you first started in guided surgery. No, let's peel it back a little bit further than that, okay? Give us your thoughts on why you think guided surgery is important, okay? So I think that this is a very interesting topic, because I know a lot of people go freehand. I know a lot of people go use guides. There's a difference between using a guide and going fully guided. So tell us, please, your thoughts on the reasons why we should be going fully guided.
Yeah, well, I'll start where you started with the question about how I ended up with the mentality I had. And as you've correctly pointed out, I'm quite an old geezer. So, you know, I went to the Eastman, and when we were at the Eastman, well, even I can go further back than that. When I did my undergraduate training, we even at that stage restored Brennemark restoration implants with on Sarah ones. I don't know if you old enough or you know remember how a dreadful Sarah one or a UCLA abutment was the other way that you. So I was lucky enough, even as an undergraduate. Graduating in 94, to have some exposure to implant dentistry in New Zealand. And at that stage, you could only place an implant if you're an oral surgeon or a periodontist. So like Brennemark, or you couldn't get trained on Nobel unless you were a specialist. So I had really no interest in doing anything apart from restoring the implants for a moderately short time, until I just saw how badly these things were getting placed, and then you're having to restore them. And in those days, it was just the Wild West, Pav. Like, you know, I'm not going to mention people, but I've seen people lift flaps back in the day, just go, nope, can't put an implant in there, and just sew it closed, and that was it, you know. Yeah. You know, I was then getting these cases back, and, you know, I've placed six nice implants for you to restore. And then you'd be like, well, yeah, that's great. There's six implants there. Two of them have failed. Two of them have worked, and two of them can't be restored. And you sort of were going, well, if it's going to be that bad, somebody else doing it for me, I might as well do the surgery myself.
Yeah.
Now, I had the benefit of through being in this generation, and this is why a lot of people who talk about the brain-guided approach or the freehand approach, you know, they're all from this generation. But the thing that's different is back in those days, the miracle was osseointegration.
Yeah.
The miracle wasn't that these things looked like teeth. And people were just glad that they could throw away their denture. And that was the big thing. So, you know, now we've gone to a stage where if you're going to do implants, and like I know you've done thousands, like, you know, I'm lucky by the nature of having done it for, you know, now almost 30 years. Like, you know, I've done quite a few as well. You know, we've got a lot of experience, but if you're getting into implant dentistry, you're expected to do the implants as well as you or I would do. So it is slightly intimidating if you're a youngster, or not even youngster, you're new to implant dentistry. Let's call it that. You're new to implant dentistry. You want to get into it, and you need to be able to deliver it like you or I will. Well, they're never going to get your freehand experience. But by using guides and going through a systematic planning workflow, there's a reasonable chance that they can keep themselves out of trouble. Now, that's where I've ended up. And the reason I got there is because I was that guy a long time ago. And I was going, well, if these guys are placing the implants badly, and in those days we didn't even talk about sort of a prosthetically driven modality. It was just for me as a prosthodontist getting given these things to restore. I was going, well, flip, it'd be a lot easier if they were in the right place. Yeah. Restoratively. So, and then I was like, well, if I'm going to want to put these things in the right place, I'm going to need to know where the bone is. So in that case, I'm going to have to take a CT scan. And then if we take a CT scan, then you're going, well, I've got to get the maximum out of the CT scan. And you've got to remember that back in the day, ordering a CT scan was a proper CT scan. So there was quite a large radiological sort of exposure for the patient and quite a lot of cost. So therefore, the ambition was to try and use the information as much as possible. So therefore, with the addition of Simplant and things like that, we were doing guided surgery. And to be fair, these were mainly full arch cases or bigger cases to justify the cost. But for a long time, it promised more than it delivered. And I think this is where Nobel Guide, and I'm not saying this to dig out Nobel, like, you know, I know you said keep it pretty neutral, but like Nobel Guide is a classic example. When that first came out and they're going, it's all flapless, but anybody who knows their onions could tell that the case that had been done on had a hip graft. So yeah. That certainly wasn't done flaplessly, you know. And they were like, you know, there was that joke after a while, you know, Noble Guide, it was, you know, teeth for an hour, not in an hour, for an hour, because like they were, you know, they were falling out so quickly after. And that probably set guided surgery back the most, because like in places like Germany and that, they actually were advertising Noble Guide on TV, and then people were going off and getting it done, and then it was not working because we didn't know what we didn't know. And now with guided surgery, because people like me have been on these steep learning curves or long journeys, it's easy for people to distillate, say, 30 years of experience and not make those mistakes. You just get the equipment's better, the workflows are better, you know, and this can really, you know, make your life a lot easier. Like today we did two nice cases. One was a case where I did two implants. The actual putting the implants in is the easiest bit, the soft tissue work and the grafting and the, you know, that's more difficult. Not because the implants couldn't be difficult if I wanted to. It's just because I've got a workflow that works for me and I follow it systematically. So I'm putting those implants in restoratively where they need to be. And the great thing about doing that is, like, so they're both lower. It was a lower right six, lower left six. So on the same patient, the first one goes in, there's probably about half a mil of exposed thread on the buckle, but you know, there's bone all around. In fact, on the lingual, I ended up taking the speed increasing and creating a emergence profile for it because it would have been too deep lingually. So for that, for me, I'm just going to do a soft tissue graft because there's not that much. I'm not too worried about a tiny little bit of exposed surface with the implant I'm using. But then on the other side, I probably had 2 or 3 millimeters of bone implant exposed on the buckle. So that's going to get GBR and soft tissue graft. Now, if I wasn't following my system, the tendency would be I'd look at that big ridge and I'd go, oh, I'm going to put that a little bit more lingually because that's where the bone is. Yeah. And then I might sit there and go, actually, I'd take my measurements. I was planning an 11 mil implant. Oh, that's going to be, there's a few more threads there exposed than I want. So I'm going to put it a bit deeper. So if I was to use my brain-guided approach, I'm always going to go looking for safety. So the safety would be it's going to be slightly more lingual than where it needs to be, ideally for restorative purposes, and I'm going to put it a little bit deeper. And, hey, I'm a guy who places deep implants, so if I'm placing deeper, they're going to be really deep. By using my system, what I'm doing is I'm placing the implant restoratively where it is, and then, hey, that's where it needs to be. So if there's some exposed threads, that needs to be grafted. You know, if you know, I'm not going to put it more lingual. I must admit, I'll just put a small caveat on that. You know, guided surgery is brain guided. So you need to, I've done a lot of it. So I've got a good feeling to whether things are right or wrong. But if you do feel that the guide's not fitting correctly, then that's when you need to bring all the other elements of making sure that everything's right. But for me, it's, you know, if the guide fits and I'm worried about maybe my placement being correct, I then go and look at my planning. If my planning's correct and my guide fits, then I trust my planning because I know historically if I don't and I make those adjustments, I regret it when I go to restore them. So that's sort of that's my sort of philosophy in a sort of nutshell.
So Nick, excuse me, just a couple of things on that. Firstly, what we know that the data tells us as well is that from the ideal position, if you start to move your implant left, right, mesial, distal, wherever it is, too superficial, too deep, that starts to impact the longevity of your results as well. We're not talking about initial integration. We're not talking about the first 3 or 4 years results. We're talking about longevity. We're starting to talk now the difference between something lasting 7, 8 years versus something lasting 20, 25 years. And the key word here is precision. Okay. So we have to be as precise as what we possibly can. Okay. And this is where guides are very good. The other thing that I love that you said as well is that guides are still brain guided. It's just done beforehand and you still need your brain switched on when you're doing surgery as well, as you said, to make sure the guide is seating properly, etc. The other thing that I love that you said as well, Nick, is that I feel there are too many people pushing guides, and particularly to newbies, making it seem that you can skip the grafting, you can skip everything else, you can just jump straight to guides.
No, you and I both know that you can't.
That's not true. That's not true. Absolutely. And this really irks me when people say that, because it's like, okay, if you just go guided in cases which need some level of soft tissue or bone grafting, you're going to get a short-term result, and then maybe even a moderate medium-term result, but then you're going to start to have problems maybe 4 or 5 years down the line. And then 4 or 5 years down the line, all of a sudden, oh, well, it's nothing that we did. The guide was fine. You know, all of a sudden it's just one of those things, or it's the implant that she's done. So I think it's really important for those who are new to implants, new to guides, are here to understand you still have to do your grafting, bone grafting, soft tissue grafting. It still needs to be done. What we're doing is we're optimizing the implant position. Would you say that that's a fair assessment, Nick?
Yeah, and even more so, you need to understand what you're doing. The companies will tell you that this is a very easy thing to do. Just, you know, get your guide and, you know, rip into complicated cases. I always teach on my courses that you should do, when you're starting out, you should do the cases that you could do without a guide with a guide. So you can just get used to the armamentarium and you're not needing to get any nasty surprises. What I always find it hilarious is people go, oh, yeah, I tried guided, it didn't really work. And I go, oh, what's the case? Oh, it was a really skinny, like, it was lower central incisor, like, you know, and like, you know, there was only a tiny little bit of bone. And you go, so, you know, you were doing a case that was barely within your comfort zone. And then you decided, well, I've got to be so precise, I'm going to go guided, even though you had no experience with guided. So you're trying to do a really tricky case with new armamentarium. You probably didn't plan the implant position yourself. And this is one of the big issues. Like, you know, when you talk about ideal placement for you will be different for ideal placement for me, to any of our friends, etc. So one of the key things with guided surgery is you need to be at least planning the implant part yourself. Like, you know, you need to have some input into that. So a lot of people, they outsource that. And you go, you can outsource a lot of it. Don't get me wrong. But the actual physical position of the implant, unless you're doing, you know, 20, 30 implants a month and your technician just knows, you know, basically, you know, how your technician, a bit like a really good nurse, almost knows exactly what you're doing. Yeah, maybe they can plan for you. But if you're just submitting things to a planning service, you don't know whether you're getting the best guy in the building or the guy who started last week. So, and invariably, they're quite often not even a technician. They might be sort of good at, whatever that football game on Xbox, you know, like that might be their credentials. Like, yeah. You need to know where to put the implants. And this is the advantage I see, Pav, is that you do the surgery, virtually before you go to the mouth. Yeah. And by doing that, that actually might give you some, oh, crikey, there's not that much bone there. I'm going to have to bone graft. Or, yeah. Oh, actually, there's a bit of deficiency there, plenty of bone, but I'm going to have to do a soft tissue graft. So it's just another tool to make us deliver more predictable results for our patients. One of the things that, like, you know, most people get wrong that they don't even know, and this is another thing when you go to third parties, and I can remember watching somebody present about this recently. So this is not, you know, and they were talking about how guided surgery doesn't work, and they put up this case. And the data set that have been planned on, so the X-ray, if you like, and the STL, which is what the guide gets made on, which is the digital sort of, and STL is the digital language of a model. So you need to merge that accurately. If you do not merge those things accurately, you do the planning on the X-ray and you make the guide on the STL. So if they're not matched perfectly, the thing can't be right.
Yeah.
And this person was trying to make the argument that the guided surgery didn't work because the implant went slightly in the wrong place. And you go, well, it can never work. You could have had perfect planning, but in the perfectly the wrong place. So you got what you planned. He just didn't realize that was his issue.
Yeah.
And this is somebody pretty renowned, you know.
Yeah. So, Nick, I love that. So let's expand on that a little bit more. What are the touch points throughout the clinical procedure and the touch points throughout the lab procedure which have potential errors which can be transferred forward? What I'm trying to get at is what do we as clinicians need to be very, very mindful of? And I think one of the things that you touched on, which I'm a big fan of as well, sometimes there's that many metal artifacts on CBCT, you get what you get. There's other ways around it, okay? But there is no excuse for not having a good set of impressions, either intraoral scan or physical impressions. That's just a substandard level of care as far as I'm concerned. But could you expand a little bit more on the touch points clinically and lab-wise where errors can potentially come in?
Yeah, so if a patient, I'm going to take a single tooth because that's the easiest way to do it. And weirdly enough, a lot of people go, single tooth, you don't need to use a guide. But for me, the argument would be that the single tooth is probably the almost more of an indication for a guide. I think, weirdly enough, a lot of the full arch stuff for an FP3, not an FP1, you can make an argument that not using guides or having a more freehand approach gives you more flexibility when you're doing that. But, like, you know, let's face it, when you're doing a single tooth, the implant is either in the right place or it's not, you know. So why would you not want to put everything in your favor? So one of the advantages that I find with doing what we do is I'm lucky. I've got a reasonable team that I've built around me. So my team will do take photos, do the intraoral scan, we'll get the CBCT. Then I'll schmooze the patient for a little bit. I normally throw the CBCT up and I just have a quick sort of mock-up of what's, and then I use that to discuss what we're doing with the patient. But it gives me a little heads up if there might be anything that I need to be worried. Oh, massive canalis sinuosis or something like that. Might have to change my plan here. Oh, actually, there's a broken bit of tooth that's been here that's actually got some pathology around, which I didn't really pick up on the OPG. You know, that sort of thing. So that gives me my initial bit to head off any hot spots that there might be in that treatment. Let's say it's all good. So the patient goes off. They know what they're going to expect coming in for the surgery. The planning goes off to the lab, and they will do a diagnostic wax up. So they do all the matching and that for me because it just makes it easier. Goes off to the lab, and they will do a diagnostic wax up, including waxing up the soft tissue. So we all know that, you know, say if you're missing a tooth or whatever, you might have had soft tissue changes. So we want the diagnostic to represent the result that we're going for, you know, the perfect result effectively. Because once that comes back and it's been all merged, matched, they normally put an implant in there for me. I'm going to have a look at that, and I'm going to take all of my measurements off the diagnostic wax up, and that's going to be like, okay, now I'm going to need to do a soft tissue graft. I know that I'm going to put the implant in most cases roughly 3.5 to 4 millimeters below the mid buccal zenith of the proposed restoration. So that might be that the gingiva on the scan is like at 2 millimeters, and I'm putting it, you know, I want to increase the soft tissue, so I'm making my plan off the perfect place. I always get the lab not to design the guide. The reason I do that is it doesn't take me long to design a guide, but it makes me do it. And if it makes me do it, it makes me look at everything. One of the reasons that I know that I couldn't trust myself, if the technician designed the guide and it was all ready and I'm busy, I'm just going to go, oh yeah, it's yeah, okay, it's all right. But when the guide's not designed, it just doesn't make any difference. I'm going to have to design the guide. So if I want to make some minor tweaks, and this is the thing, I'm designing to the screw hole. I'm not designing to the cingulum or, yeah, you know, to the middle of the tooth. you know, and quite often, you know, like the case today, I'm not even designing just with that in mind. I've designed to the diagnostic wax up, but then I've put in a digital scan body, and I'm looking at the insertion path of my restoration for a molar, and I'm going, yeah, so not only is that the right place for the implant to be from a restorative-driven point of view, also from an insertion point of view, I might make a decision that I'm going to slightly change the dimension of, like, one aspect. You know, the classic example would be when you've got, say, a premolar and a 7 and one slightly tipped. So you might make a restorative decision that you're going to true everything up, so you're not going to get in big undercuts, get food trapping, etc. You know, so these are all things that, you know, you're going through in your mind by doing the planning in this way. Yeah. Then I can send it off, and I normally, if it's an anterior, I get, say it's an anterior where I've got a tooth, I'll immediately load it. So it'll come back with the provisional ready for me to pick up. If it's a posterior, I'm doing a lot of zirconia custom healing abutments. So, like, that's another beautiful thing about putting the implants exactly where you plan them, is that you can then make sort of you can have pre-made lab elements that then make your treatment really quite streamlined and you know, quite good for the patient, good for you, good for the finances as well. You know, patients love it when the classic is when you do an immediate. You know, they come in with a tooth, they leave with a tooth. 12 weeks later, you know, because we're scanning quite often at the time of, you know, they come in and we just, I don't even really see them. I see the x-ray, just go and say get out of them. The nurse has scanned the temporary in situ, this goes off to the lab and they make it, you know. So we're really sort of driving efficiency with using guided surgery as well.
I think, you know, the important thing there, Nick, is efficiency. As you mentioned, from a business point of view, it makes sense as well. But secondly, the patients want efficiency. So I've seen a number of people, and I personally think it's because these colleagues have had the quite early on in their implant careers. And I remember that I used to do the same thing when I was early in my career as well, is they spend a lot of time planning cases and not very much time executing cases. And the patients end up with a lot of very complicated treatment plans. So I recently had a patient come to me where it was like, you know, my dentist said it was going to take best part of 18 months to do this because he wanted to remove the tooth and then wait for it to heal and then put the implant in. And then there was a secondary stage for uncovering because we're planning on using cover screws. And then he would have to do this, have to do that. I think the patient said that there was the best part of about 8 or 9 visits. And I looked at it and I was like, I can do this guy did. And, you know, we can, you know, take the tooth out, implant in straight away. And then, as you mentioned, 12 weeks later, you know, or 10 weeks later, we're fitting the definitive prosthetics. And that is a real key for patients. Okay.
Yeah.
If there is no other distinguishing factor that they're confident with both dentists, the fees are exactly the same, although my fees are always higher than average, deliberately. But somebody's going to take 8 visits to do it and you're going to do it in 2 or 3, they will come to you because patients don't want to be in the chair. They want the result. That's it. And I think that it's really important to understand that from a business point of view, guided surgery is good, but also from an efficiency point of view, because then you're not having to mess around, as you mentioned. You know, you haven't got the implant's not quite in the right place, I can't get the scan flag down, this is not right, that's not right, you know, that all of a sudden now there's food trapping that the patient doesn't like. So from an efficiency point of view, I can certainly understand where we're coming from as well.
And it's even like just like stupid things to make your life easier. Like, you know, with a guide, you can always place, you can design your guide so you have an orientation groove on it. So, and I always place my implant, even if it's a single, with the orientation groove exactly lined up. And I normally take a photo of it, or when I say I take a photo, one of my nurses will take a photo for me while I'm there. And then, so when we go to do the scanning, I've got a picture of where my implant is, or where the carrier was. So I know that it's lined up. So then when I go to put my scan body on, I know that it should be exactly in that position.
Yes.
So I'm not ever sitting there going, oh, maybe have I got it down? Have I not got it down? And, or, you know, lifting it up, or okay, well, I need some metal scan bodies so I can take a check x-ray. I don't need to worry about that because I already know from my information that I already had, because it was there, that's where my scan, that's the orientation that the flat surface is going to be on my scan body. Yeah. Boom, straight in, screw it down. You know, so I by doing that consistently, you know, you just save so much time.
Yeah.
And you get less problems, you get less remakes. You know, we've all had, you know, cases where things don't, you know, work, and that's the benefit of, you know, hopefully experience, is you think have something not work, and then you reflect on why it doesn't work, and then the next time you go, I'm not going to get caught out again like that. Yeah. So you develop systems just to make your life simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
Likewise, it's good for the laboratory, because the laboratory knows that pretty much, you know, 90% of the time or 95% of the time, everything's going to be in that orientation. So if they get something that's not like that, quite often they'll ring me up and they go, hey, Nick, you know, it doesn't look like the scan body's. And it would be like, no, actually, I put it in backward. Like, yeah, in a full arc, sometimes I'll put a scan body in a funny angle,
yeah,
just to make it easier to scan. Otherwise, the scanner gets confused with everything being too much to the buckle, you know. So, yeah, I'm glad you were thinking about it. But in this case, it's the actual orientation groove is in the right place, but I put the scan flag at a slightly different angle.
and what we can see here now is we're talking about not just increasing the level of precision with surgery, but that's translating now forward into prosthetics. And I'm sure that your lab loves you, Nick, for doing everything guided, because then they've got everything in the right place and there's no surprises, right?
Well, I was talking to Eddie Marku that the other day, and he was saying in their lab, they give a reduced fee for making the crown if you go guided.
Oh, really?
And his thing was that the people who don't use guides give them far more problems. So therefore, if you're going to pay the money for the diagnostic wax up, you're going to pay for the, which my technician agreed to this, but like, you know, so you know, if you're going to pay the extra money to do that, then the final crown will be at a lower price, yeah, than if you're not going to use a guide.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite an innovative way of thinking by a laboratory that's quite digital.
I'll have to get Eddie on to discuss that in more detail as well. So.
Yeah. He's a character.
Yeah. Nick, so when it comes to guided surgery, easy cases, intermediate cases, difficult cases, how would you put that hierarchy? Where should people start? At what point do they need additional training with guided surgery? Are there any guides? I know we've already discussed about a Nobel guide that is like, actually wouldn't go to, you know, do you have any favorites, or do you think it's predominantly down to your diagnostics and the guide building skills?
Do you know what? I think that the best systems are the ones that allow the clinician to have a lot of input. I'm not a MegaGen user, but they did have a system called R2 Gate, which actually had some really nice innovative features in it. But from my understanding of what they were saying was that they wanted to select the implant for you and make you the abutment and crown off that scan. And I'm going, look, I could get that for a temporary, but you know, hey, I'm a big fan of guided, but like, you know, if you go around the arch, I tell you what, that stuff doesn't fit that well. Like, yeah, you know, there's always a little bit of discrepancy. So you know, I'm a big believer in making your life simple unless you like it unsimple. And an example of that would be some people, when you look at software, would like to go for something free. So you could go for something like Blue Sky Bio, but you know, BlueScO Bio is a good software, but you've got to put quite a lot of work in to get it. You know, it's a bit like if you or I want to use ExoCAD as dentists, you've got to do a lot of work to get good at it. It's not an intuitive piece of software. So if you're a Straumann user, it's a good idea probably to use CoDiagnostics. If you're in the dent supply sort of world, then you could use Simplant. You know, if you are using something like ConeLog or MIS, or then use SMOP. There's a lot of, you know, the companies have their associated software, and that makes sense to use it. Now, the small caveat I would have on that is if you're going to ask somebody to mentor you, then you might want to use the software that they're good at using. Because, like, it's all very well going, well, I'm a Straumann user and I want to use CoDiagnostics, but you're a Materialise user. And I go, Pav, I need you to mentor me, because you might go, it's a lot more hassle than it's worth, you know.
Yeah.
So in that case, I might go, well, if I want Pav to mentor me, I'm going to have to use Materialise. So that's how I would look at the software side of it.
Yeah.
With respect to the guides, now, nowadays, there's really, if you take something like Chrome out of it, I think Two Pingus does a metal guide as well. But, you know, most guides nowadays are printed in some form of plastic, some sort of resin. And whether it's a spaghetti guide, like a SMOP guide, they work really well, or it's a sort of conventional guide like you get from ExoPlan or Materialise or CoDiagnostics. These things fit well. You know, so like there's no real reason. If they're not fitting, there's something wrong with your technique, you know, because the most amazing thing about it in a lot of ways is intraoral scanning, which is the way most of it, these things fit. Like, you know, you can scan around the arch with an intraoral scanner and you'd think you'd get more issues than you do, but you don't. So that's pretty straightforward. So realistically, it's getting something and trying to get used to it. Because the armamentarium for something like a Straumann or BioHorizons is different from the stuff for Ostem or Camlog, or, you know, Straumann have got a bit of both. They've got a sort of semi-keyless and a system with keys. So you're only ever going to get good at it by just practicing. And that's why I go back to what I said. Like, you know, the first 5 cases that you do that with the armamentarium, you should be doing it on a case that's simple. Ask me how I know, because, like, you know, even though I was doing lots of cases with Materialise, the first case of co-diagnostic I did was a dual arch with, I think we placed 18 implants.
Wow.
Well, I was there until about 8 o'clock, you know, so, you know. So, you know, don't do as I do as I say.
Nick, that's just, you know, the amount of experience and information that you have just speaking to you over this past 40 minutes or so is just absolutely incredible. So just as we're, let's just wrap up in a moment, but is there anything, any other words of advice that you can give for people not using guides, or whether they are using guides or want to start using guides? What is there any specific advice you'd like to give at this stage? We don't need to go into a lot of detail. Just a couple of golden nuggets would be great.
Yeah. So the thing for me is, you know, to sort of close the circle on what got me into guided is, I was doing guided on these bigger cases, and then, like, you know, I was trying to encourage people to go for guided on the smaller cases, but we're charging about an extra grand for the guides and et cetera. So what would happen is every once in a while people would go, oh, I'm not going to spend the extra, and I'd go free-handed. And like, you know, so I got to this one case where I offered a price to do it guided and a price to do it freehand. And then the lady said, I can't afford the extra grand. I want you to freehand it. Yeah. I looked at it and I was going, crikey, it's going to make my life so much easier if I use a guide. So I swallowed the cost myself. Now, I didn't tell the wife, but that, it didn't need her to tell me that that's not the way to run a business.
No.
But I decided from that point I couldn't afford to do those cases and give the guided surgery away.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to do those cases and not use such a powerful tool. So that's when I decided to just charge guided surgery costs as a through cost.
Yeah.
So, work out what your guide costs, what your CT scans cost, or whatever it is, and don't go, need to put a multiple on it. Just go, that's the through cost. As long as it's covered, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because that makes your life so much easier. And, a lot of people say to me, oh, it's all right for you, Nick. You work in nice places. Your patients will go for guided. My patients won't go for guided. And then all I say is, well, do you ask them? Do you offer it to them? Because if patients knew what you knew, they'd want what you'd want. And if you believe in it, your patients will believe in it too.
Nick, I think that's a brilliant point to finish on, because I have this conversation quite often with a lot of different people where they turn around and let me give you an example. People will turn around and they'll say, well, my patients won't go for autogenous. It's like, my patients never used to go for autogenous grafting until I used to start to tell them the benefits of it. So
yeah,
patients will buy what you are confident in selling them, and if you're not confident selling it in guides, then they won't go for it. And as you mentioned, all you need to do is put through the cost so that you're not out of pocket. But it's going to, we've already discussed the level of precision you get to with guides and how it will make your surgery smoother. It'll reduce your stress levels and your lab will love you for it as well. So I think that's a great thing to finish on, yeah.
So you posted a thing the other day about PRGF.
Yeah.
So whenever I take out a tooth, I use PRGF. And, we still do quite a lot of extractions and that, people refer in the practice. And I go to the patient, it's X with this and it's X with the PRGF. And sometimes they go, I don't want to pay extra for that. And you go, that's fine. But we charge for dry sockets, we charge a fee of this and this. And if you don't have the PRGF, you're accepting that you'll pay for, and I don't care. They can do it with or without.
Yeah.
It means that if they then have a dry socket, they then have to pay an emergency fee to get it dressed. And if they want it dressed three times, they pay that emergency fee every time.
As it should be, yeah.
Exactly. Because otherwise, as dentists, what we tend to do is we let the patient make their problems our problems.
Yeah.
So, I don't want to spend that extra money because, it's a night at the boozer or whatever. Yeah. Fair enough. But if it then doesn't go your way, then it's not my fault,
Yeah.
Now, if I do PRGF on somebody and they get a dry socket, I'll clean it out, put more PRGF in, they don't get charged anything. But I tell you what, it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that. Yeah.
So the reality is, we can't – sometimes these things are great to do because they protect us.
Yeah.
That's what.
Yeah.
And those few people who you get a problem with where they get a dry socket and they didn't do the PRGF, it's completely different. Oh, I should have done the thing you told me. It's always me. I always have these problems. Rather than if you don't have a conversation about it with them, they come in and they go, that tooth you took out.
Yes.
Oh, it's killing me. Then it's your fault.
Yeah.
Rather than doesn't matter the fact that they're smoking 40 a day and haven't followed
these. I've done full arches on patients who promised me they'd quit smoking 2 months ago, and then you walk outside after surgery, and there they are puffing away.
Yeah. And they're on the third one.
Yeah. And it's just like it just gets to a point where, patients tell you what you want to hear. It is what it is. So yeah, fantastic. Nick, I really appreciate you joining me today. Folks, I would highly recommend getting hold of Nick's book. Nick, what's the name of the book, please?
It's called Guided Surgery, Making Implant Placement Simpler.
There we go. There we go. I have actually got the book. I've read it. It's just not on my desk in front of me. That's all that it is. It's a very insightful book, and it goes into more detail, kind of what we've been discussing today as well. The other thing that I would like to mention as well is Nick runs courses on guided surgery, and people can find out more about this from the Fitz Fahy Academy. Is that correct, Nick?
Yeah, and it's sort of guided surgery is like the the cornerstone of everything we do, because it's part of my philosophy. But you know, the course is a lot about immediate loading, a lot about efficiency, a lot about how practice management, how to run teams, communication with laboratories, all of that sort of stuff. Like it's not just a 1 day course on how to do it. It's like how you can actually put guided surgery into your practice and get good at it and get it working for you.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you so much. So please do check out the Fitz Fahy Academy. A lot of people, Nick, listening are probably already connected with Nick on social media. If not, do connect with him, because he posts some fantastic stuff there as well. And just before we finish today, Titani Nerds, I just wanted to mention that my good friend Dr. Ullman Huck and I and myself, we are running a 2-day course on autogenous grafting later on this year in September. The Academy of Implant Excellence is building very nicely as well. The advanced module is just about complete, and we've started on the mastery module now, where I'll be discussing everything full arch for you. The modules, they are individual, they are available individually as well. So if you just want the essentials module to get started in implants, or you want to skip straight to the advanced module, you can get that directly from the Academy of Implant Excellence.com. So, Nick, it's been really fascinating, and I think what we'll have to do, mate, is we'll have to sit down over dinner sometime and speak about this more. And you're not actually that far from me. I keep meaning to say to you, I'd love to come and watch you operate as well.
Oh, mate.
I'm sure I've learned a lot from you as well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed seeing you when you were at Evo doing your thing as well. So, it's great to have been on. Thanks very much for having me.
Not a problem. Okay.